Good afternoon, and welcome to another episode of Realpolitik. I am your host, Viraz Mordad, and today we are going to be talking about India and why God built a wall around it in the form of the Himalayas. No, we will actually explain some of the geography of the country, its relationship with Pakistan and China, its issues with the West, and how it is facing a pretty difficult geopolitical situation, which it's trying to address with all kinds of alliances. The best place to start is with a map. And when you want to think about the historic definition of India, it sort of begins in Afghanistan or in the borders of Pakistan and Afghanistan. Because this is the Indus River, the place where Indian civilization actually emerged. And now it mostly sits in Pakistan, even though it originates in the mountains in Kashmir, in the Himalayas. And what you've had historically is this mountain barrier with China that separated the two nations and the two civilizations. You have the barrier with the mountain barrier with Myanmar, even though Myanmar is kind of Indian, kind of not. You have the monsoon season, which basically moves winds from an east-west direction to a west-east direction, depending on which part of the year you're in. And that is what allowed India to trade with Arabia and with East Africa, and with the south towards Indonesia. And that meant that the influence of Indian culture was quite extensive, to the extent that you find Hindu temples in Cambodia, in Thailand, in Burma, Myanmar, some traces of it in Malaysia, a Hindu population in Singapore, etc. So when you're thinking about the geopolitics of this region, you're thinking about a pretty huge part of the world, which is South Asia, with a massive population that is walled off from China with the Himalayas and kind of walled off from the Middle East with the mountains in Afghanistan and Pakistan. But the fundamental problem facing India is that its actual historic heartland, the Indus River Valley, is now conquered and dominated by Pakistan and by Islam. And when you think about India, you have to think about the conflict with Islam, because even in the days of the Rashidun Caliphate, that is the Islamic rule that immediately followed the death of the false prophet of Islam, Muhammad, in that 40-50-year period, the first Islamic incursions into India began. And they began out of Persia. They began sort of in this area here along the coast with some incursions into India. And then the expansions, the invasions expanded with access points via Peshawar and Quetta, which in modern times ended up becoming strongholds of the Afghan Taliban within Pakistan. So over many centuries, the Muslims expanded further into India, and that was partly reversed with the partition of India and the creation of Pakistan, but this forms an integral part of the Hindu DNA, because for a pretty long period, the majority of northern India was in fact governed by Muslims. And when you look at the geography of the place, you have the Indus-Ganges river systems, which are represented in this relatively greenish plain here, extending all the way from Karachi in Pakistan to basically Bangladesh, Dhaka and Bangladesh. And that all used to be India, but was taken away from India in partition. If you remember, during the partition of India, Pakistan was established, but this part, Bangladesh, was actually East Pakistan. The Muslim areas were supposed to be one country, and then Bangladesh and Pakistan had their own war in the 70s, which led to the separation of Bangladesh from Pakistan. But what this meant is some of the most important agricultural regions and some of the most important historic regions of India ended up being stripped away from it. And the Indian memory is very much one that sort of relies on the Mughal Empire, which was one of the gunpowder empires, which dominated the majority of northern India, and which allowed, in some cases, Hindu rulers to govern within their administration, but in many other cases, very heavily kept the Hindu population down. And the Hindus were allowed to maintain their very complicated caste system, which has sort of four major castes, the religious caste, the ruling military caste, the merchant caste, and the worker caste, and then the no caste, the untouchables, underneath that. This mess is what India inherited after the dissolution of the British Raj, after India got its independence from Britain. Before that, the British didn't actually conquer India. They conquered the Mughal Empire, which dominated big parts of northern India, and then they conquered the southern states of India. And if you look at the geography, continuing with the geography, you've got the mountain chains that sort of separate India from the rest of the world that God put there for a reason. You've got the plains around the Indus River, the Ganges River, and the Brahmaputra River, which terminates in Bangladesh and which passes through, in part, these seven states on the far east of India, which we will discuss because they're important. You've got the southern plateau, which is the most Hindu part of India, shall we say. And you've got a bunch of islands, which we won't be diving into too much. And you've got Sri Lanka. So when you think of Indian geopolitics, it's really how it relates to China and how it relates to Pakistan and the Muslim threat. These are the two defining issues when you think about India. And continuing with the issue of Islam, this is a religious map of the Indian subcontinent. You see that Pakistan here is in the darkest green. You see that Kashmir, which is contested, is sort of majority Muslim. And then you see that along the plains that connect to the other Muslim enclave of Bangladesh, you have these large areas that are 10 to 20% Muslim, which form a major threat for Indian security because the Indians can't be assured that the Muslims will be loyal to a nationalist Hindu state rather than being loyal to their religious skin. Because the view of Islam on Hinduism is quite a negative one. You could read that some of that in the Baladri's book, and he describes the Indians as in somewhat unflattering terms. But the view is that these are polytheists and that they have very strange, unexplained customs that they don't really have much of a fair legal system, that they burn their widows when the husband dies, that they have different laws to Muslims when it comes to inheritances, etc., etc. He goes on about the issues with Indians for quite some time. But the core issues for India is that the bedrock of its, or the territory which formed the bedrock of its civilization, has already been conquered and taken away from it. It's already been taken by Pakistan because the name India derives from the Indus River, and the Indus River is already conquered by the Pakistanis and is now formed by and now forms part of Pakistan. And the defining issue is that. And to make things worse for the Indians, China and Pakistan are pretty close allies, and they are both working pretty hard on constraining India and on tying it down and on making sure that the Indians don't have that many options and are slowly being surrounded, as I'll discuss in a moment. So, China's aim here is to make China's view of India is that India is mainly an American proxy. And that India is going to align with the United States against China. And therefore, what the Chinese need to do is to slowly surround India and to gradually cut it off. So the Chinese are building a major dam on the Chinese portion of the Brahmaputra River, which is going to be much larger than China's massive Three Gorges Dam, which is the largest dam in the world. And if you think about this, if you're going to build this kind of logistics in this kind of mountainous area, the camps that you will need for workers, the roads that you are going to need, the airports that are going to be required, all of that is almost inseparable from a military buildup. Because with all things military, the logistics come before the military. And the Chinese, by deciding that they're going to build a dam of that magnitude in such a forbidding terrain on the border with India, are signaling that they are expanding their military presence in the north of India, or just north of India, close to Bangladesh, close to an area that is, I mean, these states, the seven sister states that are on the border of Bangladesh, these are not majority Hindu. These are a very diverse part of India with a big Christian grouping, a big Muslim grouping, and a big tribal grouping that doesn't actually follow Hinduism. And you can sort of see that the Chinese are looking and asking themselves, can we carve up this part of India and separate it from the rest of the country so that we can weaken the Indians further and make sure that they aren't a threat? And the two countries had a brief war in 1962 in this area of Kashmir here, and the Chinese just completely won that conflict. So, briefly, the threat for India is that it is stuck between Pakistan and China, and it's facing an incredibly difficult situation as a result. One analysis here points out to what the Chinese themselves are saying about this dam that they're building. And essentially, this is a bit of a water bomb. Because if the Chinese build a dam on the Yarlung Tsangpo River, the world's highest altitude river, the world's highest altitude dam, the biggest dam in the world, they would be building, in effect, a water bomb. If they decide to fill up the dam, it's a problem for the Indians because they and Bangladesh will get less water. But if they decide to open the dam, they just flood everything in the way. And they completely crush India with a massive humanitarian disaster. And the Chinese themselves are warning that this is a massive project that is extremely dangerous, that can cause big changes in the geography because of building up a water reserve of that size. And the Chinese are working hard on just slowly surrounding India. As you know, I'm sure, there is a pretty large civil war that is going on in Myanmar. And previously, the Chinese weren't that interested, but slowly they've been expanding their support for Burma or Myanmar, whatever you want to call it, and allowing it to conquer the territory on the border with India and building deeper military cooperation so that Myanmar becomes a full open outpost for the Chinese. And they are already building massive railroads in Myanmar. They are already massive investors in the country. They're huge investors in both Thailand and Cambodia and Vietnam, and obviously Laos. And what the Chinese are trying to do is to develop enough infrastructure and enough transport capability to basically deny India and its navy the use of the Bay of Bengal. That's the idea that is animating China. And so they are backing Burma and the government in Burma in order to slowly crush Indian influence in that country. And over time, this is going to allow them to just gain influence at the expense of India. They're also doing the same with Sri Lanka. China is the biggest or second biggest investors at Sri Lanka. Sri Lanka is a Buddhist country that is deeply tied to India, obviously by geography and much else. The Sri Lankans have been messing around with the Chinese a little bit, but they just can't get over the size of investments that the Chinese are offering. And the Chinese are building everything there, from refineries to ports to rail to road, all of the logistics infrastructure. And when you take over a country's logistics, it paves the way for military influence. Because as you gain economic relevance, you exploit that politically, and you use the political influence to gain military influence. And you see the Chinese playing this generational game against the Indians all around their near abroad. They're boosting ties, they're working together, etc., etc. But obviously, China is doing the same in Bangladesh. It is a massive investment power in Bangladesh, working hard to develop Bangladesh's industrial capacity and transportation capacity. And then you see, And then you see that the Prime Minister of Bangladesh, I believe, ends up making noises about partnering with these Indian states, the seven sister states that I was mentioning earlier, in order to weaken India further, and essentially in order to expand Bangladesh's borders in partnership with China at the expense of India. Because, again, what you have in India isn't a stable polity. India was last a one nation under Hindu rule in the year 200 BC or thereabouts. Since then, it's always been a very loose confederation of different states, different regions, several thousand languages, different belief systems. People think of Hinduism as one religion. It really isn't. It's sort of a bunch of different religions and different cultures wearing one cloak, disguising themselves as something bigger than they actually are. So what China is working on is slowly surrounding India with infrastructure, with economic influence and political power in order to make sure that India gets weakened. And another example of that is the China-Pakistan Economic Corridor. This is worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And the aim is to tie the Chinese province of Xinjiang to the Pakistani port of Gawadar here on the border with Iran in order to basically get Chinese basing rights at the mouth of the Gulf of Oman and the entrance of the Persian Gulf. So China is doing everything that it can to surround India economically, and it's doing that very successfully. And it's relying on Muslim states like Pakistan and Bangladesh to some extent, but also on other Buddhist states like Myanmar and Sri Lanka to maintain this amount of influence, to weaken India, to make sure that wherever India turns, all that it finds is Chinese influence. And given that India must rely on trade using the seas, having these ports surrounding India on three directions, surrounding the Indian subcontinent in every direction, basically, is a massive win for the Chinese. It means that the Indians are effectively slowly being choked out, slowly being surrounded, and denied a sphere of influence in the areas around them. If you enjoyed this preview, please consider subscribing to lotuseaters.com, starting for just £5 a month.